Nice. It kind of sounded like a bottle of rum.
It kind of did. You're listening to The Tales We Tell, a podcast about spooky stories, unsolved mysteries, and local lore. I'm your host, Hannah Parch.
And I'm Katie.
And Kelly's here too.
She's being such a good girl.
I know. We finally let Kelly stay in here with us, and she's being very good.
This is Critter playing with a little critter.
Aww.
I gotta get more photos of it.
So sweet.
But
who made it?
Our friend and listener, Kara.
Fun.
Hold on. Gross.
Did Kara also make the crows?
Yeah, she's the one who made our crows.
Carl the crow?
Carl.
I don't know what you named yours.
I can't tell you. It's a secret. Mm-hmm. She messaged me today and she says, just did a video of me processing swim guide samples and people are going to catch me laughing because I was listening to you and Hannah.
That makes me happy.
And so that's when I was like, oh girl, that's fabulous. Wait till, like, and I said, you're totally getting a shout out when we record tonight. And she's like, wait till you check the mail. Oh, and I didn't even see that message from her until I got home and saw the mail.
Aww.
And there was a fox and a bunny and a lion. And they're all cute little stuffed critters.
Oh,
they're little
goodness.
Critters for the critter. And she even put in the note that she's like, I started making these the day you were born, sitting next to your very pregnant mother, because
so sweet.
I was literally in a meeting with her mm-hmm. for the morning, and then we were broke for lunch. That's when she gave me the awesome crows,
mm-hmm.
and this adorable, it's kind of like a mobile, but uh-huh. it's a tree branch that has trees and mountains. And,
yeah, I've seen that in pictures.
And the murder cabin. So I left from the meeting. Everyone went to go get lunch, and I went to the hospital. That meeting was rough.
Yeah. Well, you were also very, very pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at the end,
blood pressure was through the friggin' roof, and I was huge.
Hey, guys. So you might have already heard we have a couple ads in some of our current and past episodes now. And that is because Buzzsprout, which is the platform that we host our episodes on, is now giving us that opportunity to put some ads into certain episodes. So we just wanted to make a quick little announcement about it. We don't have a ton of control over where they go. So if you hear them, just know that that is what they are. We're just kind of trying to make this work. And we just wanted to go ahead and acknowledge it at the top because we know previously we have been an ad-free podcast. So if you hear some changes, just kind of roll with it. We're doing our best here, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Actually, so anyone who doesn't want to listen to ads,
right?
Sorry. But to alleviate that, you can become a patron at patreon.com, search The Tales We Tell. Not only do you get the episode a day early, but we'll make sure that that one is ad-free to our patrons.
Well, because that one will be uploaded directly to Patreon.
Yes.
Okay, that's a good... Perfect, okay.
So, that's one of the usual perks of Patreon, is that you get ad-free episodes. So, not only that, a day early, plus stickers and love notes and, you know, some fun bonus content from here and there.
Yeah.
Another way to support us and get yourself some sweet, sweet swag is go to our Redbubble store, Redbubble, search The Tales We Tell. We've got a couple different adorable logos you can put on pretty much anything. And then, since I'm doing everything backwards, like I'm legit going backwards on the normal spiel here, if you want to see a whole bunch of the pictures that we talk about through our episodes or other adorable pictures of Critter or Kelly or whatever, you can check out our website at thetaleswetellpodcast.com. There's also a contact form there if you want to reach out to us with episode suggestions. And of course, all of the pictures that are found there are also posted on our Facebook and Instagram. Search The Tales We Tell Podcast.
Yay!
Okay, love you, bye!
Cool. My only other announcement is that someone did guess our Easter egg, and it was Josh. Of course it was Josh.
I love you, Josh. So he figured it out.
He figured it out. Do you want to say what it was?
It's my name.
It's your name. Yeah. I think you gave a lot of hints
in yeah.
the last few yeah. times.
So. I really kind of tried to lay it out yeah. there.
So I'm going to leave it up to you what Josh's prize is, because I don't know if we named one or not.
We didn't.
So
I will come up with something.
Okay. Good. Katie, that's on. So Josh, hold Katie to it. That's on her. And I have a confession to make. The reason that I was so eager to let Kelly stay in here is for a little extra moral support. I have a little content warning for today.
How many dead children?
Okay, what are we okay, like...
what are we considering dead children?
Well, no, like, okay.
I would say pretty much anything under the age of, what, 15?
Well, okay.
Even Kelly doesn't want to stick around for this. She's already at the door. She's before, like, oh, dead children? Nope, listen, I'm out.
Before it was dead babies. And
babies grow up to be children.
Well, okay, but like, what are we considering babies? What's the cutoff for baby?
I don't know. Even when they're 14, if they're yours, okay. they're still your babies.
Well, give me a cutoff.
I don't want to be justifying it.
If you give me a cutoff, then I can say there's no dead babies in this one.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so this is the official content warning. This is not a Dante safe episode. There is going to be some graphic descriptions, although I will try to keep them brief. And there are some dead children. And this is a topic that I know has been covered a lot, but let me tell you, in case no one knows, it is Wednesday. We recorded like 3 days ago. So I wrote this in literally 3 days. And I was looking at all of my different topic ideas, and this was one of my like easy ones that I knew I wouldn't have a hard time finding information on. I knew there was enough in it. I knew it fit, like it hit all the things. And I was like, you know what?
Easy way to squeeze in another episode before you start your fancy new job.
Yes. So I just went ahead and did it.
Is this why you left the bottle of wine here for me?
Yeah, you know, and that's also why I went ahead and offered you liquor again before we started.
No booze before birthday.
And that's why I showed you a cute little picture of Tolly wearing his little I Love Aunt Hannah shirt. So this is the story of the Hinterkaifeck murders.
I don't know this one, actually.
Okay.
I think so.
So I will go ahead and say a very helpful source that I'm going to encourage everyone, because I think only two other podcasts, and I like deliberately did not listen to any podcasts, although I'm sure many have covered it. I know, and that's why We Drink covered it, I want to say a couple years ago, and I think Stuff You Missed in History Class covered it. I don't know. Anyways, I deliberately didn't listen to any podcasts because I didn't, you know, want to cloud things over. But I ended up going on a lot of rabbit holes on a site called Hinterkaifeck.net, which is a German site. Because spoiler alert, Hinterkaifeck is in German. Huh. And
sounded East Asian to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
weird.
It's not. It's very German.
I'm being facetious.
Oh, I was like, oh. The German name
sounds very German.
Okay, well, listen, can't read you very well today. I was so nervous about telling you about this one. So if you hop on there, most of the sites Google will kindly translate into English for you. Most of the original documents you can look at, again, most of them can be translated into English. Some of them cannot be. So there was like a really cool study that they had on there that they said they were like the only ones that like had access to it, and it was like a study that some school did as to like whether or not the murder could have been solved with today's forensics, and it was all in German. And I was like, damn it. If only.
All right, if any of our listeners speak German, let us know.
We'll come on up.
Make sure that you have access to this and you can give us the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah. And I really was sitting thinking, I was like, do I know anyone who speaks German? Because there were a couple of, obviously Google Translate is not perfect. Mm-hmm. And so there were a couple of phrases where I was like, I don't think that means what you think it means. And so I was trying to like, I was like, is there someone I can ask? And I actually do. No, she's French. Never mind. And I haven't spoken to her in many, many years. Never mind.
Anyways, the good news is I'm not showing you any pictures. Okay. I do have a floor plan that I will show you in a bit. The reason I'm not showing you pictures is A, because there are no pictures that I could find that I was confident were of the actual family when they were alive.
So non-gruesome photos.
Yeah. There are some crime scene pictures, and there's some pictures of the property that I'll probably post. But there are pictures, like, if you just Google it, there's pictures of, like, a family that comes up. No idea who the fuck they are. And after that Pollock twins situation, I am not going there again. Yeah, I'm not trusting Google images. So, all right. So here we go. Dante, leave the room. All right, so we are going to be in Bavaria in the 1920s. So there's a small town slash community slash hamlet.
Village.
And it's called Kaifek. It's located in southern Germany. It's about an hour north of Munich. And just behind, or hinter to Kaifek, is the community, or is a farmstead known as Hinterkaifeck. It was built around 1863, and on Hinterkaifeck lived a quiet family of five. So we have Victoria Gabriel, who is 35 at the time of our story, Cecilia, who is 7, Joseph, who is 2, and then Victoria's parents, Andreas Gruber, who is 63, and Cecilia Gruber, who is 73. Because Cecilia is a cradle robber and married someone 10 years younger than her. Good for her.
Yeah.
They also have a watchdog who I will go ahead and tell you is fine. Nothing happens to the watchdog.
Good. Thank you.
And it's a Pomeranian, which...
They are feisty little buggers.
They are feisty. I'm going to just argue, go ahead and spoiler right now. Not a great watchdog, turns out. Doesn't do a lot.
Victoria, only a deterrent to people who are afraid of dogs, I think.
Yeah, and I guess would make sound or, like, noises.
They make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
They're obnoxious.
Did I tell you Kelly was a really good guard dog a couple weeks ago when I was doing my stay-at-home stuff where she scared off, like, a tree-cutting guy?
Scared off Isabel.
She did scare off Isabel. Two guys came to the house because they saw a tree in our backyard. They were, like, going around to advertise their tree cutting services. And Kelly, of course, is like barking and going crazy. So I open the door. I'm home alone in the middle of the day. So I open the door and I'm just holding her by the collar and letting her, you know. And that guy had already left the door and was like at the far end. He's like, don't let your dog out after me. I was like, what you want? Why not? Who are you? And they're very kind, and, you know, we might use their services later, but I'm just saying, Kelly did a good job.
Yeah.
Okay. Victoria's husband, Carl, had died in World War I, but Victoria was making things work as a single mother. She was able to keep the farm running, so they still had a bunch of animals. They had a couple pieces of working farm equipment, and she was able to keep a maid most of the time to help around the house. Joseph was born after Carl's death, and we are not quite sure who his father was. So Victoria had been in a relationship with a local man named Lorenz Schlittenbauer. It's not super clear if that was like a public relationship or if it was a quiet relationship. Both Victoria and Lorenz were known to refer to Joseph as their son. And they had been engaged for a little bit, but Andreas, the dad, did not approve. And so they never got married, and Lorenz went off and married someone else. The family was known to keep to themselves, but in the late, in late 1921, some strange things started happening on the farm. So first, in November, their maid, Krezens is her name. She abruptly quit, and she was like, they're like, why are you quitting? And she was like, this place is haunted AF. She also would later tell authorities that she had been hearing strange sounds in the attic, and she always felt like she was being watched on the property. So she leaves, and I don't know if they immediately got another maid or not, but she leaves,
And then in March of the following year, Andreas finds a Munich newspaper on the property. And he didn't remember buying it, and he thought maybe the mailman had dropped it. But when they asked the mailman was like, no, no one around here subscribes to that paper. I don't know where it came from. Also, I should mention, the farm is, like, pretty isolated. Like, it's in the middle of nowhere. So, it's not like the mailman is making the rounds and, you know, there's neighbors very nearby.
And he would probably be familiar. He's probably only got a handful of people, so he would be fairly familiar with, you know, newspaper subscriptions.
Yes. Later that month, Andreas found footprints in the snow. The footprints led from the woods to the machine room. So the machine room is like a shed. That's like where they keep like the tractor and the farm equipment, I guess.
Like they also, a barn?
I'm going to wait to show you the layout of the house. But, like, pretty much the whole house is, like, there's, like, the living quarters. And then, like, the barn and everything is attached to the house. Hmm. And so it's, like, the barn, the machine room, like, the feeding area, the like, everything is kind of
attached. I guess attached. You can get to everything when it's cold and snowing.
Yeah, kind of. It becomes important later that there are not very many ways into the house. So, like, the front door doesn't work, the back door works, and the machine room is a way into the house. I think that's how they get in and out of the house, is through the machine room, and that leads into, like, the barn area. They also heard footsteps in the attic around this time, and when Andreas investigated, he didn't find anything. Andreas was telling a couple friends and neighbors about the weird things that were happening, but he never asked for nor accepted any help, and he never reported any of this to the police.
Well, yeah, I mean, a newspaper and footsteps.
Hmm.
What is the police going to do?
This is true.
That makes sense to me. Normally, a lot of times people do say, I'm like, why would you do that? Or why wouldn't you do that? Like, that seems very odd to me. And while, yes, these do seem like odd things,
Not
police worthy. I'm glad they at least told neighbors, so there's records of other people knowing about it.
But. Yeah. So the last strange thing that happened was that towards the end of the month, one of their house keys went missing, which is not ever really a great thing.
Mm-mm.
On March 31st of 1922, Maria Baumgartner, who's 44, arrived at the farm to start her new position as the family's maid. So her sister dropped her off. She stayed for a little bit for a short visit and then left. Maria was going to start the following day, which was a Saturday. So she was going to settle in for the night, get ready to start fresh the next day. The following day, Saturday morning, two coffee sellers named Hans and Edward Shirovsky came to the farm to take Victoria's order, which I kind of assume maybe this was just a regular thing. Like, this is how you order your coffee, is you wait for the Shirovsky
Starbucks come brother, to you.
The Shirovsky brothers to come by and take your order. So they come to the house, they knock on the door, no one comes to the door. They kind of walk around the property to see if anyone is, like, doing any work on the farm. They don't see anyone. They did notice that the gate to the machine room was open, but they were like, I guess I don't want coffee today, so they left.
And they're like, we'll walk around, but we're not gonna, you know, trespass or anything.
They were very much like, not our business.
Yeah.
That same day, Cecilia was marked absent from school. Because I guess in 1922, you went to school on Saturdays. The following day, Sunday, April 2nd, the family didn't show up for church. And the following Monday, April 3rd, Cecilia misses school again. And now the family's mail is beginning to pile up at the post office. On Tuesday, a man named Albert Hoffner came to Hinterkaifeck to repair the engine of the family's food chopper. And I assume this was, like, a prearranged appointment. Like, he was supposed to come on this time, or on this day at this time. When he arrived, no one came to meet him at the door, so he waited around for about an hour. While he was waiting, he noticed that the farm was oddly quiet. There were no other sounds except for the animals. And eventually he decided that he was just going to start the work on his own. I don't know where the food chopper was. I don't think it was in the machine room. Mm-hmm. But he worked for about 4.5 hours. I guess finished his work. I assume he left and probably told some people, because word was kind of getting around that, like, the family isn't...
Haven't seen them around.
Yeah, haven't seen them around. So...
This is when you do a welfare check and have the police going by.
So... At 3:30 that afternoon, Lorenz, remember him?
Mm-hmm. Potential baby daddy.
Potential baby daddy. He sends, not himself, a full grown-ass man. He sends his 16-year-old son, Johan, and his 9-year-old stepson, Joseph, to go check on the family. I'm going to say bad dad, stepdad move.
I'm going to guess that he's now... inadvertently traumatized his children.
Possibly, like, in retrospect, but they don't find anything. They come back and they're just like, as everyone has previously stated, Dad, there's no one there.
Good girl, Kelly. Sensing the time where things are about to get real, she come over here and just start licking me.
So, they come back, they're like, no one's there. So, Lorenz is like, alright, I guess I will, as a grown man, go... do this myself. So he brings some people with him, two other grown men, a man named Michael Pohl, my German is now done, and Jacob Siegel.
Okay. Jason Siegel?
Yeah,
Jason Siegel. I loved him in that show.
They are approaching the property. I mean, it's got to be like close to evening time now. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that they...
And is this Tuesday now or Wednesday?
This is still Tuesday.
Okay.
They must have encountered the same kind of eerie silence that Albert had, where, like, it's just the animals. Mm-hmm. After looking around the property first, they came to the barn, which was locked. So the engine room was, or the machine room was open, but the door to the actual barn was locked. Something told them, instead of going into the house, to go into the barn. And so they actually broke the barn door open. And what they found inside... surely haunted all of them for the rest of their lives.
Kelly, I'm gonna... She's getting antsy.
Really sit down and, like...
You're building up the tension.
I know.
She can feel it. Podcast support puppy.
I know. Okay. Buried under about 1.5 feet of hay, or about 0.5 meter of hay, were 4 bodies, obviously bludgeoned and hacked to death. They were the bodies of Andreas Gruber, Cecilia Gruber, Victoria Gabriel, and Cecilia Gabriel.
Meanwhile, their lost son, Hans Gruber, heard of their murders and decided to turn into a villain and avenge their death by taking over Nakatomi Plaza.
Sure. I'm going to pretend that I get that reference.
Die Hard.
I've seen it once. Sorry.
You only experienced Christmas once?
I've only seen it on Christmas, and it was like 2 years ago.
Okay, well, you're doing Christmas wrong.
I know, apparently. All right, so they discover these bodies, and then Lorenz immediately insists on going inside the house. Michael and Jacob are like, hey, the killer might be inside. And Lorenz is like, my son might be inside, and so I'm going to go inside. So he goes inside.
So I got distracted by my Hans Gruber thing. Who all was in the barn again?
The elderly parents, Andreas and Cecilia, and then Victoria and little Cecilia, the 7-year-old.
The granddaughter.
So Joseph, little Joseph and Maria, the new maid, are still missing. So Lorenz goes inside the house, despite not knowing if there's a killer inside. Unfortunately, he finds Maria bludgeoned to death in her room, and then Joseph also killed in the same way in Victoria's room. Both of their bodies had been covered. So Maria's was covered with a quilt from her bed, and Joseph's was covered with one of Victoria's dresses. The farm animals hadn't been harmed, and the little watchdog had not been harmed.
But none of them have been fed for days, so that is abuse.
They had been fed.
What?
Yeah, so the farm animals and the dog had apparently been driving, taken care of. Yeah. I did read one account that said that the dog might have been hit because it looked like one of his eyes was, like, clouded and swollen, and he was, like, really, like, wouldn't let anyone touch him. Mm-hmm. But I also read accounts that said, like, no, that dog wouldn't let anyone touch him anyway. Like, he would literally bite anyone. He bit Cecilia one time. Like, he was just a mean dog.
Sounds like a Pomeranian. Not all Pomeranians, obviously.
No, but like,
a lot of them.
Probably why he was their watchdog is because he hated everyone. But by all accounts, he was, like, not healthy, undernourished. Yeah, like, and the animals were taken care of. Yeah. Obviously, now police are called. Autopsies were performed the following day on the property by a Dr. Johann Baptist Amuller. So it appeared that although the bodies in the barn had been moved, and this is something that Lorenz, Michael, and Jacob admitted to doing because, A, they had to uncover them, so they had to move the hay. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know how they moved them exactly, but the pictures, like if you look up the crime scene photos, the ones that you see are ones where they have moved them back to how they found them. Mm. And I don't know if they, like, moved them to, like, try and check to see if they were alive or what. But they moved them somehow. Regardless, it was very obvious that all four of them had been killed in that area because there wasn't blood anywhere else. The same was apparent with Maria and Joseph. They had both been killed in their respective rooms. The murder weapon was initially thought to be a mattock, but there was not one that was immediately found near the victims. Little Cecilia had survived her initial assault for several hours, although she had likely been in shock, and there was evidence that she had been pulling out clumps of her own hair while she laid in the barn dying next to her mother. Victoria had 9 star-shaped wounds on the right side of her face. The older Cecilia had 7 blows to the head and signs of strangulation, and Andreas had been beaten so severely that his cheekbones were exposed. And after the autopsies, the heads of the victims were removed and sent to Munich for further examination. That's it for, like, graphic details. Yeah, sorry.
We'll just power through it?
Power through it. Okay. So, the investigation. So, the home showed some evidence of burglary, but, like, not enough that one would think this was the reason for murdering 6 people. There was only one room that seemed to have been... Oh, I can show you the map now. Sorry. Okay. There's 2 because one of them I had to do a bunch of translations in. Okay, so that's the one you get. So, see what I mean where it's all connected? So, like, the part on the far left is the living quarters. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is, like, barn-related, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, they came in through the engine house or machine room or whatever. That's where the footprints were found. That's where the bodies were found.
And this is when the footprints were found, that weird occurrence.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, they did specify, but the plan that is on the website was in black and white. And they were like, the blue circle indicates. And I was like, well, this doesn't help me. But one of the bedrooms had been ransacked. And on the bed, they found, quote, final notes and other written papers, a notebook, an empty wallet, and a woman's watch. Presumably, the wallet was emptied by either the killer or killers, if there was more than one. So there was presumably some money that was taken, but there were plenty of other valuables left in the home. There was gold, silver, mortgage bonds, jewelry. There was, like, plenty of other stuff that could have been taken. The house appeared to have been lived in for the last couple days. So all of the bread had been eaten. Meat had been recently cut from the pantry, and there was evidence that the oven had been used consistently. In the machine room, which showed evidence of being broken into, there was a small attic space that was approximately shoulder height and accessible by ladder. And police found impressions in the straw suggesting that someone had laid there for a period of time. And I don't know why that creeps me out so much that, like, the room that you go into, there's, like, a little attic that's, like, more or less eye level, and someone could have been just, like,
laying in there without you knowing. Like, if that was where that engine was, where the guy came in and worked for hours.
Oh, yeah, that's why I said, like, I don't know where it was, but, like, yeah. Hopefully not.
Could
yeah.
you imagine?
And, like, what's so creepy, too, is, like, he was there for 4.5 hours doing work on that property mm-hmm. while everyone was literally just inside dead. And then, like,
Kelly,
darling.
It's my fault for having any exposed skin.
I mean, truly. And then, like, and we'll get into this a little bit, but, like, if the killer or killers were, like, truly still living there, then, like, they could have just been in the house, like, chilling out while people were just, like, coming around doing stuff, like, coming to get their coffee order in the morning and...
Okay. Man, this poor maid, if she had just waited a day.
Oh my gosh,
start.
I know. Although, wait till you hear, like, all the shit that the other maid put up with, because I'm like, girl, I would have quit too. So, the places on the map that have the little binoculars,
mm-hmm.
those were places where tiles had been removed from the roof so that if you were in the attic, you could look out over the courtyard.
Hmm.
So, like, if someone was in the attic making all of those walking around noises, they could have just been looking out into the courtyard, like, watching shit. Which, again...
I mean, it probably gets boring hanging out in an attic.
I would like to remind you, too, that, like, I now do all of my writing for these in the hallway at the secretary desk, which is directly underneath the attic access to this damn house.
So someone could be, like,
oh my god,
slide it open and just stare down and look at you.
And when the Terminex man came, he, like, didn't...
That's a...
Like, the thing... The oh, gosh, it just...
That's so my house is 115 years old, mm-hmm. and it makes a lot of noises. And I also have creatures that live in my house, you know, all the
critters and creatures.
Yeah, the dogs and the cat, and just, like, every now and then you hear a thump thump, and it's the cat jumping off the bed.
Right.
But then you hear just other noises, and it's just like, am I alone? Because, like, I don't know if you've ever seen those pictures or stories online of evidence that somebody's been living in someone's attic or crawl space.
Oh, God, I hate those.
Or their basement or something. That freaks me out so bad. Ooh. Like, there's not a lot of things that I'm afraid of or freaked out by.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know this. I'm yeah. tough. But the idea that somebody is living in my attic
mm-hmm.
and is there when I'm there freaks me out.
Yep.
The hell out. Like, there's some times where, like, I have to come home during the middle of the day that's mm-hmm. totally out of routine or whatever.
Oh, gosh. You're like, what if I catch them?
That I am sometimes, I'm not afraid that I'm going to walk into my house and my husband's going to be having an affair. No, right. I'm going to be worried that there's a small person in a clown costume in my kitchen.
Oh,
or napping in my bed.
Yeah, that is one of the scarier aspects of this story. I think we covered this. It wasn't irrational fears. Maybe it was. I'm pretty sure I talked about the, it was like a brief story of the girl who she had, like, just moved into an apartment and, like, she
yes.
had the puppy.
Yes.
Yeah. And, like, her pipe burst or something and the puppy, like, ended up on the sink and
yeah,
and then when she figured it out, she had to walk past the one place that the guy could be hiding because she mm-hmm. figured out he was in the closet. And I heard that for the very first time, like, when I was living by myself in Tarboro in that one apartment, and I was like, someone's here.
I had an apartment, and I may have told this story when we talked about that, but I had an apartment that the attic access was in my closet, which was attached to mm-hmm. my bedroom. And you could literally sit in the apartment quietly and you could hear squirrels in the attic,
oh,
in the ceiling, in the walls. Like, I've got a video of Jory sitting on the bed with me staring at one of the walls, and you can barely hear that scratching noise of the squirrels inside the walls.
Ugh.
And I'm just like, I'm terrified to, like, open up that that attic access. So I told the apartment office
yeah
and instead got a biology lesson. like, oh, well, you know, their claws and teeth grow so fast, so they've got to chew and scratch on things. And I'm like, that's wonderful for them. There are tons of trees all around the property. That would be an excellent place for these squirrels. Oh, much better than the inside of my freaking walls.
Yeah. Good grief.
Sorry.
Okay. Gotta love landlords.
I'm like, so you don't want to do anything? Like, well, I mean, we could call somebody, but they're just going to get in again. I'm like, so that's a no on doing something about the squirrels. Yeah. All right. Sorry about that, but we needed bit of levity for all of this.
Obviously, this evidence, along with information from the former maid about the strange sounds, led investigators to believe that possibly the killers had been maybe living in the house for some time before they murdered the family. And then there is definitely evidence to suggest that they stayed in the house for several days after the murders. Police did find a pickaxe at the south end of the feeding lane, I think is where they found it. Super unclear on that part. That's where Google Translate kind of let me down a little bit. But the way they found it, it was like leaned up against something and it was with the iron end up. And it was leaning close enough to the cattle that the cattle could reach it. And when they found it, the cattle were licking it. And they were licking away what appeared to be traces of blood. Which I would say brilliant if that were the case. However, I don't know that they ever got it tested to see if it was actually blood.
What year was this again?
1922.
Okay.
There were also reddish brown spots on the handle that appeared to be dried blood. But again, they never said if it was ever tested. And they did eventually rule it out as the singular murder weapon because it couldn't account for all of the injuries that everyone sustained. However, the following year, when the home was demolished, they uncovered a hoe in the attic. The tool.
That's not where hoes are supposed to live. There's nothing for them there.
And it was, like, hidden. It was, like, very clearly, it wasn't just, like, left up there mm-hmm. for storage. It was hidden. And, like, police had, like, searched the whole house by this time and hadn't found anything. It was determined that this was a tool that Andreas had made to be used on the farm. The witness that they had who, like, identified it was, like, very specific. He was like, Andreas made this. He's not a tool maker, so he didn't make it correctly. And, like, the handle didn't want to stay attached, so he had to put this, like, bolt in it. And so it had, like, a basically, like, a bolt with, like, a nut on the end mm-hmm. to, like, keep it in place. But, like,
just to keep the head on.
Yeah, but it obviously didn't look like a
professional thing. Yeah. It looked like a broken tool that somebody fixed.
Yes. So there's a hoe in the attic. And there's a nut on the hoe.
Did the hoe bust a nut?
No. Okay. So they found...
So the hoe has not busted any...
The hoe has not busted a nut. The mm-hmm. nut is still in...
On the hoe?
On the hoe.
Children. Oh my gosh.
So there's still they find traces of human blood and human hair. The nut, slash bolt could have made the star-shaped wounds that were on Victoria's head. But again, this particular, tool couldn't account for all of the injuries. But I think this is just a way of saying that there could have been more than one
killer.
Murder. Yeah. Killer or murder weapon. Like... Mm-hmm. And truly finding the murder weapon, like, doesn't get us any closer to finding the killer because so far they're just both things that you would find on a farm.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, I guess they were able to test and prove that it was, in fact, human blood and human hair. But, you know, in the instance of the pickaxe where they had something that looked like blood, you know, it wouldn't be uncommon to find blood on tools. I mean, it would probably still be uncommon to find it on, like, a pickaxe or something.
Right.
But, you know, without testing to verify that it's human, like...
Yeah.
The idea of finding blood on a working farm with animals...
Yeah.
It shouldn't be surprising.
Yeah. And they did say, too, that, like, on the hoe, they also found, in addition to...
I wouldn't giggle at that, but you brought it up, and now
listen,
it's in front of
the
my
original
mind.
Word for it is the fucking German word for it, and that was really hard to say. And
the hoe bag?
No. It's like, oh, it's on the sheet. Because it was found, it's over by where the maid was.
Yep.
The Ruthau.
Fundort.
Fundort means location. Or locale. I learned that. That's my one word I learned. I don't know. Say that word. Pronounce it.
No.
Okay, then. We're calling it a hoe.
I like this one over here, the coochie.
Wait, which one?
The coochie.
Oh, yeah.
It's got what is it, the umlaut over the
two. Oh, yeah. That's the kitchen.
Yeah. The two dots over a vowel is an umlaut, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Coochie. Coochie? I don't know. Kitchen.
Now, does that make an oo sound or a yeah sound, like a Q?
What did we learn for the werewolf of Dusseldorf?
Is that a U with an umlaut? Yeah. So it would make an oo. So yeah. This would be the coochie.
There you go. All right, we're learning.
I'm a child.
Okay. Oh, what I was going to say is, in addition to human hair, they also found rabbit hair. So, I don't know. Maybe they're killing rabbits, too. I don't know. Anyways.
Maybe he tested it on the rabbit and was like, oh, yeah, this is a deadly weapon. Let's go for bigger prey.
Yeah. So, the theory that police came up with is that on the night of March 31st, and they believe it was late at night because everyone except for Maria was found in their night clothes, that the killer or killers somehow lured the family members one by one into the barn and killed them, with the exception of Maria and Joseph, and that they used an unknown weapon. The nature of how they lured them out is completely unknown. Investigators tried to determine whether, because first they thought maybe they caused the animals to make a sound, and so they wanted them to go check on the animals. But they tested, and even if you were standing where they were killed and screamed from the living quarters, you wouldn't be able to hear it. So it's unlikely that any of the victims were even aware that there was any kind of potential danger as they went out. They think that the killer likely knew their way around the property, but whether this is because they knew the family or because they had been secretly living there isn't really clear.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a few witnesses, not to the crime, obviously, but around...
Other than the coffee sellers.
Other than the coffee sellers. So at 3 a.m. on April 1st, which would have just been hours after the murders, a farmer named Simon Reiblander... saw two figures at the edge of the woods near Hinterkaifeck as he was walking home. And when he noticed them, or when they noticed him noticing them, they turned around so that he couldn't see their faces. And he didn't think anything of it until he later learned of the murders, and then he was like, that seemed suspicious. On the night of April 1st, a man named Michael Plokel was passing by Hinterkaifeck and noticed someone was using the oven, which was in a separate room area building in the courtyard, I think. It was kind of outside-ish. When the person saw him, the person came out with a lantern. And the lantern was so bright that Michael couldn't see who was carrying it. And something about this, freaked him out, and so he just, took off. But he noticed as he left that the smoke from the oven smelled bad, although I couldn't find that in the original documents. And he also noticed, okay, this is where the translation, I needed a German person. I think what this means is that he noticed that the family dog was tied up to the area where the oven was, and so he assumed that the man was, a family member. The way it translated was, the dog was, hanging from or tied from. But, the dog was fine. They made very clear the dog was okay and fine. So, I think it just means the dog was, with him and, tied up. And so he thought, well, he's hanging out with the dog.
The guard dog.
The guard dog. It's probably fine. But those are the only, witnesses we have. So, I'm going to go over some suspects. I'm going to go least likely to most likely to some weird ones. Okay, very briefly, they considered, let's see if you remember who this is, Carl Gabriel.
A newspaper thing?
No, he's Victoria's dead husband.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, in any instance of, you know, murder or whatever, you always check the husband first.
This is true. And
they were just following protocol.
They were, and they were like,
oh, we checked him out. His alibi is pretty solid. Oh, yeah, what was it? The cemetery. They were really? Like, is he working the graveyard shift? You could say that.
I think what they did, they were like, well, did you find a grave? And they were like, no, we didn't. They were like, they said he died in the war. I guess his body was never recovered or brought home or something. He was killed in 1914. So, like, almost 10 years previously. And so some people were like, oh, his body's never recovered. Like, maybe he didn't actually die. And maybe he came back and he got mad because Victoria had a child by another man. And so he murdered the entire family, including his own child. I don't know. But pretty quickly, a bunch of soldiers were like, no, no, we were there when he was killed. Like, he's very dead. Then, briefly on the suspect list, was Andreas Gruber, who's also dead, if you recall. So here's where Andreas turns out was actually a real piece of shit. There's some evidence, and by some, I mean there's court documents showing that he was having an abusive, incestuous relationship with Victoria. And there were rumors that he had actually fathered Joseph. And so,
I saw that one coming. As soon as you were talking about him being a piece of shit, I was like, well, I know where this is going.
Yep. So some speculated that perhaps his abuse had finally turned murderous and extended to the whole family in some kind of murder-suicide situation.
How did he beat his face open, though?
That is a great question.
And then cover himself in straw.
Well, you know, you're just a little detective here.
Do I get a bad?
No, but you can take a drink. So the other, one of the other theories is that, like, someone else in the family just, like, wanted all of the bad stuff to stop.
Hans Gruber. He was the long-lost brother, found out what his dad was doing to his sister, and was like, oh, hell no, everyone's gonna get punished. And then, you know, he just, the reason he didn't save the children is because he was a little demented himself.
Uh-huh.
And so he's like, I can't save these kids. I just have to give them, you know, show them mercy by taking them out of this life so they don't have to suffer with him anymore. And then the maid would have been a witness, so she's obviously got to go.
Right. There's some better ways he could have done it. Quicker ways.
Well, yeah, and that's why he was like, ugh, now I gotta go to L.A.
gotta go to L.A.
Take over this tower.
Oh, my gosh. All right, I'll watch Die Hard again. Maybe I might wait till Christmas.
That's fine, but when Shelton and I inevitably watch it for Christmas, we'll invite you and Jericho.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. As long as I get to hold the baby.
If he'll stay still long enough.
I know, I'm going to miss half the movie again.
By then, he's going to be, what, 9 months?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Love it.
9 months.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh my gosh, can Jarek dress up as Santa?
Yes, absolutely.
You know his track record.
But I was about to say, but he has to have a uniform, like, approval, because the last time he dressed as Santa, he was wearing the beard and the hat, but also a rainbow thong.
Yeah. And nothing else.
He had boots on.
And he had on, like, a ho-ho-ho necklace.
Yeah, he did have, like, a necklace, but he had some boots on.
Yeah. That was, like, my, my first Christmas with
him. Uh-huh.
Oh, good times. Okay, well, you...
Those photos are for our Patreon patrons.
you pointed out the flaw in this great theory, which is that there's no way to self-inflict those wounds. As much as you might want to. Okay, our next suspect is Lorenz. So, Michael and Jacob...
So far, the only real suspect.
Yeah, the only living one so far. So, Michael and Jacob both reported that Lorenz had acted weirdly calm and nonchalant when discovering and handling the bodies, one of whom was his former lover.
Another of whom may have been his son?
Yeah. And some people have said, like, maybe he was in shock. You know, it's that you don't know how you're going to react.
Could also, yeah, like, everyone grieves this, I was going to say the same, no.
Yeah.
The opposite of that.
Everyone grieves the same.
Everyone grieves differently, and then, yes, there is a whole shock thing, and, like, some people compartmentalize.
Yeah.
And it might be one of those, like, survival tactics of, like, okay, I just need to be present, like, okay, I need to figure out this, and I will process all of my feelings on this later, but first, like, action first, feelings later.
Yeah, and it may have been, like, when he realized what had happened and realized that Joseph wasn't there, that he immediately went into, okay, I need to find my son, and nothing else, I obviously can't save Victoria. Yeah. I have to do whatever. I have to stay together to find, you know.
Again, kind of compartmentalizing.
Yeah.
Like, act first. Like, okay, I can't, like you said, I can't do anything about this right now. I need to figure out where my son is.
Yeah.
Because whether or not it's his actual son, clearly he loved him as a son.
Yeah.
And I think that's,
That's basically the same thing. Yeah. His insistence on going inside, regardless of whether he knew it was safe or not, seemed suspicious to some.
Just brave. Determined.
He had a key to the house, which people thought was weird, except that he had been dating Victoria, so, like... And, like, it also said that, like, they might have still been having an affair, like, secretly, even though he was, like,
married. Even though he's clearly got a stepson and another, an actual,
like,
son.
It may have now been, like, an actually very secret affair, because even though she's not married, he's married. Mm-hmm. But, like, they very obviously, like...
Maybe that's why her father didn't approve.
I mean, or, because he's an asshole and wanted to, So, some suspected that perhaps Victoria had asked for child support money and that he killed her to get out of having to pay, but it wouldn't make sense that he would then kill her entire family and his own child and everyone else in such an awful, like, and calculated way.
No, again, because that would be considered, like, a family annihilator. So same thing with Gruber Sr., because I can't remember his first name.
Andreas. Yeah.
They would be considered family annihilators.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of them... I mean, if Andreas hadn't died, or if he had died of, like, an obvious, an actually attainable suicide, not bludgeoned to death, then yes, potentially would fit some molds of the... I think there's, three types of family annihilator?
Yeah.
Again, not a psychologist. I just... listen to a lot of podcasts.
But you are a scientist.
I am a scientist. Take a drink, my friends.
I just finished my drink, so.
Too bad for you.
I also haven't eaten dinner, so.
Me either.
Trying to pace myself a little bit.
Sheldon's making cast iron skillet pizza.
Ooh, Jarek's making tacos.
Oh, I love tacos. But it's Wednesday.
I'll
eat tacos another day. I'm just kidding. I could eat tacos every day of the week. So I think I would still consider... baby daddy. God, I'm doing terrible with
Lorenz.
Names.
Lorenz. It's okay. They're all German.
I don't know why. Well, because Lorenz doesn't sound German to me.
Yeah.
Or very German to me, but for some reason I keep wanting to call him Alphonse.
You got the NZ at the end. That's okay.
So, I mean, even though it wasn't really his family, Nz probably could still, like, if he had done it, he probably could be classified as a family annihilator, even though it wasn't his. Like, typically, they're, like, the father of a family.
Yeah.
But he clearly had a long-standing relationship with the entire family. Yeah. So.
Well, and it would have made sense if he had gone in and, like, just killed, like, Andreas. Or, like, maybe even, like, just her parents. Mm-hmm. Like, if he felt like her mom was also complicit in everything.
Right.
But it wouldn't make sense for him to kill the woman that he was allegedly in love with and the child that he cared for and, like, the little Cecilia who is just, like, an innocent bystander. Let's see. 3 years after the murder, Lorenz made a comment to someone that the frozen ground had prevented the murderer from burying the bodies. And someone was like, oh my gosh, that means he had intimate knowledge of the crime.
Or a bit of common sense about...
Yeah, but he was a farmer, and also he lived fairly close to them, so, like, the ground would have been the same where he was, and he was probably, like, just, again, stating, like, a bit of common knowledge.
Well, probably kind of like, well, why did the killer just cover them with hay? Which, again, if there's a psychology thing, and I can't remember what it is, but usually it's if someone covers up their victims, it's that they either potentially knew the victim or just in general showed remorse for the crime.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what to do with that, but obviously, if they were all covered, it was...
But then they, like, continued to live in the house.
And that was probably it, is they probably didn't want to be confronted with their crime every time they had to, like, look in.
I mean, you know, it's look at the face really of inconvenient. You had to go to the barn and, like... see all the people that you murdered.
I'm like, man, all these dead people just laying around being so lazy.
We laugh so that we don't cry. Everything's awful. Okay, well, Lorenz was questioned pretty extensively by police. They were unable to...
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, fair. They were unable to place him at the crime scene. Some people think that he wasn't investigated thoroughly enough, but I think it was fine. I think he's fine. Police also interviewed the former maid, Crescens, and let me tell you what a life Crescens had. So, because she had some names, she's like, let me tell you who I think did it.
She's like, can you pour me a big old thing of tea? Because I just want to knock it on over. Like, I'm not going to spill it. I'm just going to knock that shit over.
So, first was a man named Anton... I really want to say Bichler. It's probably Bickler. So, he had worked on the farm for a short while and would speak to Crescens often about the family. And apparently, his deal was just he had a big old crush on her. And he proposed to her a bunch of times, and she was like...
Thanks, but no thanks.
No thank you. And she, like, talked to the Grubers about him, and they were like, no, he's a bad dude. He, like, steals shit. His stuff isn't, like, no. And she was like, okay, I got you.
Like, we'll hire him for, like, temporary labor. Yeah. But that's about it.
Yeah, they're basically like, no, he's bad news bears. So, apparently, he eventually got upset with her rejections, you know, as men sometimes do, and may have implied that he blamed the Grubers / Gabriels for her not being with him, and said that they should all die. She also told police that this watchdog, the little Pomeranian, would never bark at him. She was the one who was like, this dog hated everyone. She even bit the child. This guy, for some reason, this dog liked, would never bark at him.
I guess, like, recognizes like.
Right.
You know, evil and recognizes evil.
Right. And...
all again, I'm not hating on all Pomeranians.
just
pretty much every Pomeranian I've ever met.
And so she believed that Anton and his brother, along with a man named George Siegel. So she believed that Anton, along with his brother and a man named George Siegel, who had apparently tried to break into the house or had broken into the house in 1920, she believed that they committed the murder to get the family's fortune, which... would have made sense if the home had, like, if their money had been taken.
Or if, it doesn't sound like the family really has a fortune.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're, you know, farmers who are, you know, doing well, but not necessarily well off.
Yeah, like, not enough to kill. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, this Anton guy does kind of strike me as someone who, like, would be mad enough to go kill everyone. I don't know, just... So, Crescens is like, okay, so there's him, and then there's this guy named Joseph Thaler, and he used to stand at her window at night and try to talk to her, but she would not answer him, because she's smart.
How much time between when she quit and Maria started?
She quit in November, and Maria started March 31st.
Yeah. So, like, way to go, Krizen, on, you know, getting all the attention from the boys. Like, good for you, sister. But this just sounds like a humble brag of all of the boys that were trying to get her attention. But if she has been gone for half of the year.
Yeah.
That's plenty of time for these fellas to get the program that she is no longer there.
Yeah. And, like, I'm pretty sure she left and, like, went, like, she went to work for another family, but then she, like, got married. And then in her statement that I read, it implied that, like, she had a baby while she was working for the Grubers, like, because she said something about, like, he used to, like, talk to me at my window, but then, like, I started sleeping in the living room after I had my baby, and so then he couldn't talk to me through my window. A lot of weird shit, though. Like, because Anton would talk to her through her fucking window, too. And I was like, I would leave, too, if these weird men wouldn't stop talking at me.
Creepy.
Through my fucking bedroom window. Leave me alone. So, Joseph is talking to her, like, literally talking at her, because she is not answering. And he tells her, or he would tell her, that he knew which rooms each family member slept in, that he knew they had a lot of money. He and his brother had already been convicted of minor crimes, and in either 1920 or 1921, they had previously tried to break into the home, but were stopped by Andreas. And this is just, like, a weird little after detail. Their sister Barbara and her fiancé were in the process of building a house before the murders, but they had to stop due to lack of funding. And then after the murders, they were able to finish building the home and paid off the workers in gold. And then also after that, the brothers and Barbara's fiancé ended their friendship and, like, kind of became enemies. Hmm. So, like, I don't know. I'm like, you got a point, Crescens. Like,
I mean, she's definitely got the most credible sounding potential suspects here.
Better than
here.
Carl. Like, he's dead. Come on. Okay, so.
Better than freaking Andreas.
I know, like, literally
he's
better.
He's not only dead, he's one of the victims.
Better than the first two victims that y'all came up with. So, a man named Joseph Betts told police that he used to work with a guy named Peter Weber in the winter of 1919 and 1920, and Peter used to talk about a remote farm called Hinterkaifeck, and said that he knew that an old couple lived there with their daughter and her children. Probably he knew about the incest allegations. Betts testified that Weber had suggested to him that they kill the family to get their money, but when Betts wasn't like, yeah, let's do that, he was like,
just kidding.
Weber was like, yeah, never mind, I was joking.
I was drunk, I didn't mean it.
And I have no idea if they investigated him or not. And then I have two last ones, which are just, to me, not credible at all. A woman named Crescentia Maya claimed on her deathbed that her brothers Adolf and Anton Gump committed the murders. And so in 1951, an investigation was opened against Anton Gump because Adolf had already died, but nothing came of it because it's 30 years later. And then in 1971, a woman named Therese, I think, claimed that when she was 12, again, it's 1971, Therese. What are we doing? She was like, oh, when I was 12, a lady came to my house and visited with my mother, and she said that her sons, Carl and Andreas S., those are their names, no last name, committed the murders. And her evidence was that the woman said, quote, Andreas regretted that he lost his penknife. And in 1923, when they found the hoe, they also found a pocket knife that they never identified. And so Therese was like, I know who committed the murders, because when I was 12, this lady was... It's 1971, Therese. It's a little late for that. Anyways, so the murders at Hinterkaifeck remain unsolved. There is a small memorial at the site of the old farmstead. And if you look it up on Google Maps, it's referenced as a place of worship, which I think is actually really nice. And the memorial reads, and again, this is from Google Translate, so bear with me. On March 31st, 1922, the Gabriel Gruber family from here fell victim to the hands of a godless murderer. And then it lists the names and birth dates of all of the victims. And for Maria's, it has her name and birth date, and then it just says maid. And I feel like they could have just left that part out.
Yeah, I don't think it was intended as, like, derogatory or demeaning or anything. I think it was just a way of differentiating her from the family. The family,
true. But yeah, that's the story of the Hinterkaifeck murders. And...
So, my theories, it could definitely be any of those people that, Krizen suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Those definitely seem like very plausible leads.
Yes. The police really had a slow start with
I mean, I understand the whole, like, rule number one is always check with the spouse.
Yeah.
But if the spouse has been dead, like, maybe send, you know, your newbie detective. Like, you go look on that lead while we do the actual police work here.
Yeah.
You know, delegate. So you're not wasting a lot of time maybe and resources. Maybe don't
list him as an official suspect. Just...
At the very least, just demote him to person of interest. Jeez. But no, I think, yeah, definitely any of those sketchy people mm-hmm. sounded very plausible. I mean, my theory is kind of any kind of transient worker mm-hmm. in general, like maybe someone who worked, you know, harvest time with them or like temporary worker. Or someone kind of passing through kind of thing. Like someone who is traveling. Not necessarily traveling, but like a vagabond kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, literally just, hey, maybe came to the door and was like, hey, can you help me out? And yeah. Like, no. And he was like, I'm going to go creep in your machine room and then murder you all tonight.
Yeah,
and
hang out
and
your
then little- I will have a place to stay.
Yeah, and, like, I thought, too, I was like, where did this person think that, like, with the whole living there for a while, like, how did he think that was going to pan out for him?
That's why I think it was, like, a transient person.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, a temporary worker or a hobo coming through.
Because I guess, too, if it was one of those known people, someone would have been like, hey, they were suspiciously, like, gone for the same amount of days that we didn't see the family. But I don't know. That story has always freaked me out. It was the one that I started to do when I ended up doing the Villisca Axe murders.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, one of the suspects that I didn't mention because I didn't think it was very credible was some person that, like, some guy wrote a book about. And it started because he was investigating the Villisca Axe murders and, like, thought mm-hmm. that there was, like, a serial killer from Germany who, like, committed all of these murders along, like, the East Coast and then returned to Germany and committed this murder.
I mean, it's not impossible. It's just improbable.
Yeah. And again, it's like, what's the motive? It's a very, very gory, graphic murder for, like, not a very clear motive. And
whereas, like, the motive here, again, is not super clear.
Yeah.
Like, it literally kind of sounds like they were murdered for a place to stay.
Yeah, because, it does, I mean, kind of sound like that.
Their house was lived in, their resources were utilized.
Yeah.
a couple of things were stolen, but it doesn't, it, like, robbery doesn't seem like the, like, yeah. overlaying.
Or maybe it was one of those things where, like, the money from the wallet was taken because that's something you put in your pocket, but the other stuff was left because they were planning on staying for a while. They weren't planning on getting out of there and going, mm-hmm. so they, you know.
Yeah, they might take and sell things, like, yeah. little, like, piecemeal as needed.
Yeah.
When they needed more cash.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it sounded like, honestly, they were murdered for a place to stay.
Oh my gosh, this, mm-hmm. Can you please get a security system at your new murder house adjacent home?
Oh yeah, we're definitely gonna get cameras.
Okay, great, because I'm now concerned about, you know, the well-being of everyone.
Well, at least the good thing is that we live in the day and age of cell phones too, so like it's if we're there and people show up, mm-hmm. We at least have cell service up at the top of the hill, not at the bottom of the hill. So we just have to be careful about only getting murdered at the top of the hill.
Only get murdered at the top of the hill. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. This is making me anxious. I've already got like first aid jitters, and I had one of those like I was like, oh, I'm gonna pick out my outfit for tomorrow, and then I tried on like everything I own. I was like, I hate everything. Yeah. Everything looks terrible. Yeah, and now I'm just like nervous about people breaking into your house in the mountains that I've never been to. So, anyways.
Well, focus on that because, I don't know, if you can choose your stress, choose the ridiculous thing and so that you don't get all in your head for your first day.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, when I see everyone next, when we see everyone next.
Which, who knows when that will be because we haven't seen any of y'all ever. That's the joy of radio.
Oh my gosh.
You don't have to look at us.
It's not a radio show, Katie. It's a podcast.
It's the 21st century version of radio.
Well, when we come back next, Katie will have a 6-month-old child.
Yeah, his half birthday is the day after my birthday.
That is crazy. I will have a new job that I will officially be working at.
Lots of exciting changes.
And, we will both have eaten dinner tonight, so that yep. I can guarantee you, oh. I hope.
And I'll have finally had some liquor for
you'll
the first
have some
time
liquor.
In
there
over
you go.
A year.
And hopefully I'll pick one of those stories on my list that's not about, you know, child murder.
I need to get on top of my whole, I've got an episode that, I've got all the research printed out, I just need to compile my notes and put the story together. It's just, I don't have a lot of time.
Oh, you really? With a full-time job and a 6-month-old critter?
Keeps me on my toes. It's
funny. That's weird. I have tons of time. I don't have tons of time. I also don't have time,
starting
and
tomorrow,
I have none
you
of
don't.
Those things.
Starting tomorrow, you don't have the time.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you guys for listening.
We love you.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.